not taking a risk is a risk, right? So like you want to take a calculated risk and an educated risk, but not taking a risk literally is a risk. You're risking opportunity costs. I mean, had I not taken the risk to quit my corporate job and go all in into real estate investing, I would still be working for someone else. I would still be under the illusion of false job security. I would still have somebody else being in control of my paycheck and my job duties. And I would quite frankly be miserable. So yeah, not taking a risk is a risk.
Welcome back to another episode of the Real Estate Junkie Podcast. Today, we're diving into an exciting episode with Tasha DeRegis. Tasha left a career in HR to dive headfirst into real estate investing. And in just a few short years, she built a lucrative flipping, rental, and wholesaling business unlike anything you've ever seen. So join me as we explore building lasting wealth with Tasha. All right. Well, hey, Tasha, I'm thrilled we could make this happen. You're killing it in the real estate world right now, and there's just so much wisdom to glean from your journey. I'm excited to dive into this and share it with our listeners today. So let's start with your backstory. How did you get into real estate in the first place? If you could give us a brief breakdown of the Tasha before real estate and maybe how you found real estate.
Yeah. So before real estate, I was hoping to get into human resources. I graduated with a degree in industrial and organizational psychology. So like my trajectory was going to be HR and like HR business partner and like eventually CEO. So that's kind of like what I was hoping to do. And I started out after college, working as an executive team leader of human resources. And in that position, I realized that corporate doesn't really care about you. So I was working long hours. I was eventually switched into a position that had nothing to do with human resources. And I was like, well, this isn't like my career path. Like this isn't going to take me down the route that I'm looking to go or give me that experience that I need for it. So I realized then that like I didn't have any control over my work life or even my career path. And I didn't like that. So I decided to quit and then try to find a way to work for myself. So for me to do that, I was researching a bunch of different avenues and real estate was like the easiest foot in the door.
So hold on. So you actually quit before you like decided I'm going to go with real estate?
Yeah, I did. I quit before I decided to go with real estate. I just knew I didn't want to do that anymore. So yeah, I quit with no plans, just vibes.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So tell us about how you bumped into real estate then.
One of my bosses was flipping houses and I kind of felt like if he could do it, like why couldn't I do it? And it sounded like a really good investment strategy. So I decided to kind of like research it a little bit more. And while I was researching it, I was also temping and the companies that I was temping at just happened to be real estate related. So I was working for like home builders. I was working for like manufacturers of like different types of stone. And so I read a book called The Book on Flipping Houses by Jay Scott. And 3 weeks later, I decided to flip a house and I actually closed on it. Like I put a contract in after 3 weeks after I read the book.
Wow. So where, what market did you purchase this home in?
Nashville, Middle Tennessee, which is a really good market. Right now, our prices aren't like really skyrocketing, obviously, because of the interest rate hikes. But from 2016 to 2022, the houses have appreciated 78% on average.
Yeah. No, Nashville is a great market. I've heard great things about it. So you did your first flip and then was it successful from start to finish or did you hit some road bumps? Like, tell me about that journey.
My first flip was successful. There wasn't a lot of road bumps. I did change realtors like twice, cause the house didn't sell right away, which I don't think it was the agent. I think I was just impatient. Now that I have my license, I kind of know that. So it took a little longer to sell than I thought. But I will say there was a big surprise with my first flip. It actually turned out to be a murder-suicide house.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. I found that out after I lived in it for about a month.
So you learned why you were able to pick it up for as cheap as you did.
Yeah. Yeah. The neighbor let my gardener know and I still didn't believe it. Like I was like, yeah, whatever. They're just like trying to like scare me, whatever. And turns out, no, it was true because one of my friends ended up being one of my neighbor's nephews. And when he came to the house to see it, he was like, yeah, this is a murder-suicide house. I was like, nice. I've been staying in a haunted house.
So in Nashville, I know each state's different. Do you have to disclose that when you sell a home? So when you flipped it, did you have
to disclose it?
Okay. So
yeah,
so,
you don't have to disclose that. I think in most states, the only reason you would have to disclose that is if it was like a famous murder-suicide that would get like a lot of traffic from like the community, like visitors or something. But like I didn't even hear the story in Nashville. So
yeah, I mean, in Colorado, they don't have to disclose it. You can ask and they can tell you, but they don't have to. And that's something I learned. I sold a house to a friend of mine, and he was buying it as a house hack. Turns out his Airbnb in the basement, someone had been chopped up with an axe. It's a pretty gruesome story. The good thing, I guess, is that they didn't actually die in the house. They died in the hospital, so that gave them a little bit of relief. But yeah, I mean, that's crazy. So you bought a murderer house, and you fixed it up, and you sold it, and then you caught the bug that I have, that a lot of real estate investors get, where now you're hunting for your next one, right?
Yeah, I told myself, you know, I went in with an exit strategy, like multiple exit strategies, but I told myself, you know, if this house doesn't work out, I'll just refinance it, I'll live in it, I'll rent out the rooms, and it's a house hack. Like, you can't go wrong. But since it did work out, I was like, this is what I want to do. And it worked out really well, and it was fun. So I decided to go all in.
Tell me about your journey after that. Like, how many more homes did you flip?
Yeah. So I flipped 14 houses before I got into wholesaling. And after about 2 weeks of trying to get into wholesaling, really, I was trying to get into wholesaling to bring myself deals. Like I wanted to scale my flipping pipeline. And I wasn't able to do that by buying houses on the MLS or buying them from wholesalers because the margins were just so small. Like once in a while you might find a good deal, but it just wasn't consistent. So I was making, you know, $25,000 to $40,000 on a flip. And it just wasn't a scalable process for me because finding those deals was so few and far in between. So when I did start wholesaling, I realized that I was making the same amount wholesaling as I was flipping. And so I kind of decided like, I actually hate flipping and I just want to wholesale and I want to buy and hold and I want to do new construction. And so that's what I did. I leveraged my wholesaling company to be able to cherry pick my own deals. So that way I could be number one, pickier with my buy box, do quality deals over quantity of deals, and also have a system that pays for itself. So obviously my wholesaling system, I do assign all of my contracts that pays for my team, that pays for my marketing, and then that pays for me to acquire deals with deep, deep discounts. I'm talking six figures of equity for every rental property that I've purchased. I'm able to do buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat on all of the properties that I purchased. So I have zero cash in those properties. And then I also got into new construction, being able to do that. So I saw that like a lot of my buyers were making, you know, $100,000 per house on the back end of new construction deals. So I was like, I want a part of that. So I was able to get into new construction by leveraging my killer off-market deals with tons of equity in it, bringing it to a partner who said, hey, I'm going to take care of all of the financial responsibility. You brought the deep deal, the deep equity deal. That equity is your contribution. And now we're going to take the deal to the finish line and split it 50-50 on the back end.
Oh, wow. That's cool. So real quick, there are probably lots of listeners right now that are just, you know, they discovered my podcast. They want to get into real estate. Maybe they're not even familiar with wholesaling. So can you break down what wholesaling is? And, you know, do I need to have a real estate license to wholesale? Give me a breakdown of what it is and how it works.
Yeah, sure. So right now in 2024, you don't need your real estate license to wholesale, at least in the state of Tennessee. And I'm pretty sure in most states, you don't need your real estate license to wholesale. But yeah, what wholesaling is you or your team reaches out to a seller, or a seller reaches out to you, and you put the property under contract. So say Billy wants $100,000 for their property. Okay, Billy, I'm going to write up a contract. I'm going to give you $100,000 for your property. I have the right to either purchase the property or assign it to somebody else. And that's what I'm going to do. So typically wholesale deals are like 2 to 3 week processes. You send the deal out to your buyer's list, and then you get hopefully multiple offers on the property. The buyer then pays you a fee. So say you get the deal for $100,000 from Billy, and for the buyer to be able to buy you out of the contract, you're going to charge $25,000. So you send the deal out to the buyer for $125,000. At this point, the buyer puts it under contract. It is now their contract to purchase, so long as they pay you that $25,000. So on closing day, the seller gets their $100,000 and you get your $25,000. And then the buyer gets their property that they're going to flip or rent out or build on.
You are able to successfully find these deals with that big of a discount where there's enough room to mark it up so you can make that money. That difference when it goes from your hands to the actual end buyer. Quick break in our show for a small but impactful favor. If you're enjoying the Real Estate Junkie podcast, please support us with a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This simple step is a big help in bringing you more great guests and top-tier real estate insights. Thanks for being such an important part of our community. Now back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So what you do, like the, just like with flipping, the money is made when you make your offer.
Yeah. You make money when you buy real estate, not when you sell it.
Exactly. You make money when you buy, not when you sell. Same goes for wholesaling. So you make your money when you make that offer to the seller and they accept it, not when you find a buyer and mark the price up, because the buyer is only going to pay what the property is worth. So you have to make sure that you have accounted for your fee in your offer with the seller.
So you have to get these properties at a deep discount from the very beginning. And I know you've developed a system to do this. You actually have a team that does it for you and just brings you the ripe fruit and hands it to you. So tell me a little bit about that. Like, how were you able to put a team together that basically pays for itself and just brings you deals?
So I started small. And I actually started out doing like my own cold calling and my own texting. I made it to about 50 cold calls before I realized that I'm not cut out for cold calling. And then I hired someone to do it. But yeah, I just started small. I hired a cold caller. I hired a texter. I trained them. I shadowed them. I held their hand through like all of the training process. And then I was able to add more and more. So then once I had my cold caller and texter, I was like, okay, now I needed an admin. So my admin takes care of, you know, all of the lists, the marketing plan. She like sticks to the marketing plan to make sure that we're hitting the leads in the right platforms at the right times, the right amount of times, and in the right order. So my admin takes care of all of that. I was able to hire an admin. And then from there, after I did about one or two deals, I went ahead and hired an acquisitions manager. And the beauty of my business is it's completely virtual. Like I've probably been out to like, well, I went to one property this year so far, but like last year, I think I went to like maybe one property too. And it's just because I decided I wanted to instead of sending someone else out.
So you find a good deal, your acquisition team finds a good deal, sends it to you, then you present it to a list of buyers that you have, right? And then they either take it or they don't. And maybe some of them you're taking too, right? If it's an incredible deal, you're like, you know what, I'm going to keep this one for myself. That's how you do it now?
Yeah. Typically, if the deal has six, like if I could make six figures on the deal, if I wholesaled it to someone else, I typically keep that, number one, for tax purposes. But number two, it usually works as a rental property and I want to keep building long-term wealth. I'm really picky about rental properties because I prefer quality over quantity. So I won't buy a rental property that doesn't have six figures of equity built into it. And I won't buy a rental property that's not going to get me a net of at least $800 per door per month.
So who's doing the research on these properties then to determine that? Does your team basically give you a breakdown of all the numbers?
Yeah. So my acquisitions manager is able to do this, but I'm a little bit of a control freak when it comes to numbers. So I actually do this myself.
Okay. And so more recently, you've started coaching other people that have probably watched you go from quitting your job to falling into real estate. And now you're just killing it. You know, you did 14 flips, you built a wholesale operation, you're building your rental portfolio out, you're doing flips. Now you're diving into new construction. And I'm sure you've had a ton of like friends and family coming to you, and you, so you decided to put together an actual coaching program, right?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. I had a lot of people who were looking for guidance. And so I thought it would be a really good idea to just systematize it and then make it to where people have a system to like look at and watch videos on, but I also can hold their hand on a weekly basis to make sure that they're applying everything that they're learning in their coaching program directly. Because I feel like, so I think it's important to always continue your education. You never know what other people are doing that you might not be. So like I do actively invest in mentorship all the time. And I think that all great leaders do, right? I mean, there was a mentor that I had that actually Grant Cardone is using right now. So in that, I was able to see what I don't like about coaching courses and what I do like about coaching courses. Something I don't like about coaching courses is how it can be very hands-off. So for me and my students, I make sure that it's hands-on, which means like I don't work with everybody because I can't, because I'm just one person. And obviously my main gig is real estate investing. But for the students I do take on, I make sure that I'm like very attentive with them. So,
well, there's a lot of coaching programs out there that are basically, hey, go watch these videos. Good luck. You know, basically after you paid a premium to watch videos, so to have someone actually hold your hand. And one of the other things you did, we talked about before this podcast, is that you actually help your students that you're coaching build an acquisition team, right?
Yeah. I have access to companies that I partner with who build teams. So they have pre-trained, pre-vetted employees. So I have employees that we can just plug and play into any space. So with my coaching program, you know, something I didn't like about other coaching programs is that they consider everybody like a one size fits all. Well, for me, I prefer to figure out my client's situation financially and time-wise. So if they don't have a lot of time, I'm going to still have a good business model for them to be able to implement quickly and efficiently. And then the same goes for those who don't have a ton of money. If they don't have a ton of money, I have, you know, resources available to them to still be able to do everything that I do. So yeah, I do have the option for my clients to be able to plug and play their employees who are already pre-trained and pre-vetted. And that's through my partnerships with companies that I've actually worked with to do that with my company.
So what's next for Tasha? Your business, your real estate portfolio and coaching, like where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
So in the next 5 years, I definitely want to have continued growing my rental portfolio. And I want to keep growing my new construction pipeline. I think that's something that I'm going to want to do for years to come. So right now I have 32 new construction units pending. One of those is a 7 build that I'm trying to get subdivided. So that could be 4 to 7 units. However, I want to be able to consistently keep that up. I think 32 a year is a good number, but you know, maybe by year 5, I'll be at like 50 a year. So yeah, I want to keep doing that. And then out of my new construction units, I'm keeping a couple of them. So I don't see myself getting a ton of doors, like being a rental property owner is like not, I mean, I want to do it for wealth building. So I'm doing it to hold equity. I'm not really doing it for like a volume of doors, but as long as my properties are going to bring me a lot of cash flow, I'm going to keep them. So I'm going to keep a couple properties a year as well until then.
Yeah. I mean, it's not, doors don't mean anything. Like if you're making $25 a door, you're going to have a lot of doors to make that cash flow worth it versus if you have one property with that creates $1,000 a month in cash flow, like I'd rather have, you know, 10 of those versus, you know, 125 a door properties. Plus there's a lot less to have to worry about at night so you can sleep better. I just had one of my rentals last night, the tenant called me and a pipe had frozen and they turned on the hose outside to wash their car and the line exploded in the house and, you know, gallons and gallons of water was pouring in. So, we all have these landlord nightmares. So to minimize that, is always nice. And if you can find a property that cash flows well and also will appreciate, you're sitting on gold. You really are.
Exactly. Yeah. I would rather have, you know, 20 doors to someone else's 80 doors and that 20 doors be grossing the same amount. Because at the end of the day, if you look at what those 80 doors are spending on maintenance, property management, upkeep, liabilities, turnover, I mean, their HVACs go out. Like that's going to completely eliminate all of the profit margin that they're making. Versus my 20 doors, you know, I have less overhead. I have less maintenance. I have less responsibility, less liability, less turnover, but more cash flow. Mm-hmm. So like for me, like people, it's a common question that I get. Oh, how many doors do you have?
Yeah.
Wrong question. How much are you netting on your rental properties? Like that's what I'm focused on.
That's great. I mean, that's where it's at. And we're in sync there. Absolutely. So do you have like, this is something I started asking all of my guests. Do you have like a quote or something that, you know, is like your mantra, as you wake up every morning that kind of just drives you? Do you have something you can share with our audience?
Something that I say to myself all the time is work smart, not hard. So I'll catch myself, like I'm a busy person and it's almost because I like have to be. So I catch myself like getting too busy and like, I'm like, am I even being productive? And so then I just think like work smart, not hard. But also another thing that I say to myself, like quite often is not taking a risk is a risk, right? So like mm-hmm. you want to take a calculated risk and an educated risk, but not taking a risk literally is a risk. You're risking opportunity costs. I mean, had I not taken the risk to quit my corporate job and go all in into real estate investing, I would still be working for someone else. I would still be under the illusion of false job security. I would still have somebody else being in control of my paycheck and my job duties. And I would quite frankly be miserable. So yeah, not taking a risk is a risk.
Great advice. I 100% agree with you. That's one of my mantras too. Like you just have to dive in. Because 99.9% of the people out there are too scared to jump in. And so that's what differentiates successful people from everyone else is they're not afraid. Well, they may be afraid, but they jump in anyway. And that's exactly what you did. And look at where you are today. That is so good to hear. Tasha, you know, it was really great talking with you. I think I'm doing pretty good. But I'm seriously interested in your system, the way that you've built this lead system out. I think it's incredible. I think it's something that real estate agents could even like tap into. Like right now, if you're listening to the news, there's lots of changes with the way commission structures are going to work. And wholesaling might just be that gap for creative real estate agents that are out there. So I think it's just really incredible what you've put together. And honestly, I'd love to get my older kids plugged in with you. So how can people reach out to you and learn more about you and your coaching?
Yeah. If you want to learn more about me and my coaching program, I actually post a lot of free content every single day on Instagram. And my handle is @TheRenovationQueen.
@TheRenovationQueen. Tasha, it was great talking with you. Thank you for spending the time with me today. I'm following you. I'm watching you. I can't wait to see what you do over the next few years. And I encourage everyone else out there to look her up. I will put your handle out there with this podcast and information about your coaching program as well. It was great talking with you, Tasha.
Yeah, it was great talking to you too. Thanks so much.